Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, your weekly guide through matters crucial to families and the preservation of traditional values in the Commonwealth and beyond. Archives of this and past shows are available at afaofpa.org. Now your host, a dedicated advocate for family values and the director of the American Family Association of Pennsylvania, Diane Gramley.
This is the second of a two-part series as we look at American farms, specifically Pennsylvania farms, and we have to ask a couple questions. Has a government interference in agriculture created a nationwide problem? Have we become too dependent upon foreign nations for our food? And I guess that's three questions. Number three, are we facing food insecurity? Once again, my guests are Joe and Brenda Cochran from Tioga County. They're dairy farmers in that county up in the central part, up near the New York line in PA. Thanks, Joe and Brenda, for being with us again.
Thank you.
Happy to be here, Diane.
Okay, so, you know, as we continue our discussion about dairy farms in particular, as we've lost 98% of dairy farms since the 70s, what happened in April of 1981? That was terrible.
Well, what happened at that time was that through the actions in Congress, eventually with the complete cooperation of the Reagan administration, the United States effectively decoupled parity pricing for dairy farmers from what I would call, and this is what I'm calling it, functional parity. Okay, functional parity, the intent of Congress. No one's going to convince me that the earlier branches of government did not intend to enact legislation to benefit farmers. There were a lot of farmers. They were strong social class, and definitely they were strong political class. No one's going to convince me that any congressional action in 1922 or the late 30s or even late 40s.
Yeah, both my grandparents on both my mom's and dad's side were both small farmers. So, yeah, I understand.
Right.
Yeah.
So if anybody had known that they would use the captivity, say, of a Capra-Volstead Act or a 37 AMAA or a farm bill in the late 40s to come back decades later after Mr. Nixon decided to implement open free trade policies with a communist nation, they would have been appalled, and it would have been a political nightmare for any politician supporting those policies. But the Flanagan Report was supposed to be a white paper done in secret. It was never supposed to come to public attention. It was brought to the public's attention through the efforts of the late Senator Hubert Humphrey, a Democrat, who came from Minnesota, a major dairy state.
Oh, yeah.
My copy of the Flanagan Report, there's basically kind of an acknowledgement, a deferential acknowledgement that we are aware that Senator Humphrey was upset about this, and his wishes were that this not be used in any way to hurt the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
But it has.
Oh, yeah.
The Flanagan Report was the secret blueprint for getting rid of the type of family farmers that nobody had a problem with. They were more than benefiting the prosperity and food security of this nation. Let's face it, if you look at the late 40s with that farm bill that supposedly obligated adjustments between 75 to 90% of parity, we had a lot of people in a war-torn post-World War II world fed under the Marshall Plan at the efforts of the American farmer. But I think that the evolution of some very unscrupulous special interests, you look at the CED report, there were more and more people in corporate life saying there's too much labor being wasted here. This is an inefficient allocation of labor. We've got to get some of these people off these farms and ranches. And the way to do this is to lower their income. You're not going to get rid of a farmer, rancher, or a fisherman anyway, except take away his or her money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they're gonna come back with resilience after fire, after destruction, storms, you name it.
So I'm going to interrupt right quick. So was it an effort to force the small farmer out of business? But was it an effort to push them into the city or into the suburbs to find the job? I'm thinking United Nations.
Okay, my understanding that the think tank policy position, and I believe it's called the CED report, the CEOs basically looked at labor allocation, and they said this is allocation, and they said basically we are wasting labor in these rural communities. We got to get these people into the areas of the country that we need workers and factories.
Yeah.
So it's definitely central planning. It's a challenge to our private property that is enshrined in our Constitution, our self-determination, our right to happiness, not to be enslaved by what I call the investment model of food production. It's basically putting the factory model on agriculture, which to that point was more agrarian than industrialized. I mean, you go back and look at the draft animals who were providing most of the power on farms, and that after World War II, we had salesmen coming to the farmers saying, hey, you need to get in Johnny Popper or something, and they started having the Green and Red War, you know, were you International or John Deere. The reality is that most of agriculture was self-contained based upon the sun, the rain, the temperature, feeding the animals, and getting animal power on the farm. Then they've industrialized it to the point where I think we have an investment class who has decided to take over all aspects of food production under the guise of modernization, efficiency, economies of scale, market forces. The talk that a farmer is subjected to in the press, the farming press, land-grant universities,
Like Penn State.
It's demoralizing. It's demoralizing. It takes us so far away from what I would call our God-given biblical roots that we need to have a humane, sustainable, blessed by God food system. To me, there's no blessings in the current food system because it's so far removed from God's creation.
Oh, yeah. And you talk about sustainability. That's a word that you hear many of the conservationists talking about sustainability. Is there any feedback or any reaction from the conservation folks about the demise of the farmers?
I'll be very frank here, and this is simply my opinion. I will not say that other farmers don't have different perspectives. Throughout our history, this couple right here, we have had great relationships with the real people in the government who are working for what was the intent of President Lincoln when USDA was formed. These are people who are frequently our neighbors. They do want to save the bay, okay, but they may not necessarily be able to speak up and say, are we going to save the bay and get rid of all these farmers? They're in a bind. They're kind of like consumers buying this bad food. They know it's not right, but they don't have any power base
between
to get out of it.
Yeah, between a rock and a hard place.
My father-in-law and my husband, and originally we farmed right at the top of the bay. They were conservation farmers from the start. They would do rotations. They did strips. They did contour, you name it.
You're talking about Chesapeake Bay, the Chesapeake Bay.
Correct. Okay. Yes, we were originally Marylanders. Okay.
Right.
So we came to the top of Pennsylvania, and as we mentioned at that meeting, and we're being very upfront here, same with DEP people. They have a job to do, but I'm not sure the average person in Pennsylvania knows that how the job's getting done is getting rid of your traditional farmers.
Yeah.
And we're the ones who are most reformable. If we are doing something wrong, we are very educable. That was the whole purpose of a lot of the extension workers to come out and tell us, you don't want to create another dust bowl. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to keep planting the same crop over and over again. And we want to help you in the house. You know, here's a better way for canning.
Right.
They have completely lost sight of that. USDA, and by extension, a lot of the systems within the state, land grant, you name it, are basically point people to enforce or execute the agenda that is exactly what was revealed by Hubert Humphrey telling us what's going on in the administration of Richard Nixon with Peter Flanagan.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what we have to push back on. And there are so few farmers and ranchers and independent fishermen left.
Yeah.
Most of these people who produced our food historically, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
They're dead. They are broken. And it so tore apart these families that you don't have any reasonable young people coming on, whether from on farm, on ranch, on the fishing boat, or from the community to do what we're doing, okay? Because it's too stupid.
Yeah.
Why would anybody want to get up in the morning to take care of a beloved herd of cows when you can't feed them, you can't vet them, you can't keep them from being lean, and then you're facing a tyrannical banking system that keeps putting you in debt with high interest that is not covered by that federal minimum. And the co-ops who have the legal authority to set a reasonable price, as long as it does not unduly enhance the price above it, they're part of the problem. They're the ones talking to our Ag Committee people, our general congressmen and senators, and the farmer, rancher, fisherman, and the eaters are shut out.
Yeah. So the in-between person, the co-ops, are really running the show. They're not allowing the farmers and ranchers and fishermen to express their real concerns to the people in power, to Congress and such as that. Is that what I'm getting? The co-ops are the they're supposed to be in between people, but they're not. They're actually running the show.
Yes, and that is the predominant problem with dairy farmers, okay? Mm-hmm. I can't speak for the other commodities. Okay. I know some of the other commodities are experiencing, say, a failure on the part of the government to enforce Packers and Stockyards Act mm-hmm. or investigate obvious signs of corruption. We had DOJ under Ali Ramadan, which was Bush administration, investigate co-op corruption in the Deep South. He went down there. He did his investigation. He was shocked. He said it was worse than Enron. He brings the information back. The Bush administration deep sticks it. The joke is they threw it in a closet and slammed the door. And Ali Ramadan was career DOJ employee, and I think he probably retired. He wasn't able to deliver the goods. Then we have the Obama administration comes in, brings in Christine Varney, and she was from the private sector. My understanding is she had a tremendous knowledge of corruption and market concentration out there in the marketplace, and she did field hearings all across the country, spoke directly to farmers and ranchers and other aggrieved parties by these policies. And she was getting ready to issue her report that we were under rampant market concentration, corruption, intimidation, threats in agriculture at all levels. We're talking about dairy, mm-hmm. we're talking about beef, we're talking about poultry, et cetera. And all of a sudden, we hear through the grapevine, oh, no, she's gone. She's back in, say, private practice.
Oh, wow.
So you have a Republican administration mm-hmm. and a Democrat administration. Neither one, through DOJ, wants to touch. What those of us out in the field or in the barnyard are saying is a need to be investigated. And that's public hearings where anybody should be able to come in and tell our legislators yes. what is wrong with this level of corruption in the food production system.
Yeah, I went to the USDA website in preparation for this interview, and President Lincoln, when he established it, called it the People's Department.
That's correct.
Currently, the USDA's website says that the department is made up of 29 agencies and offices with nearly 100,000 employees who serve the American people at more than 4,500 locations across the country and abroad. It also says we keep America's ranchers and farmers in business. We provide leadership on food, agriculture, nutrition, and other issues based on public policy, available science, and effective management. But they ain't doing it.
Exactly. Now, when you go back to President Lincoln and the People's Department, which I believe was early 1860s, mm-hmm. there were many, many, many farmers.
Oh, yeah.
And there again, no one's going to convince me that President Lincoln didn't have a vision to help the farmers. I don't think he anticipated that there was going to be sort of a ripple effect. And what was an agency set up to help farmers would be the tyranny, the people who were charged with getting rid of us. But the 100,000, interestingly, Joe and I had a problem with USDA in the 90s. We had to get our senator and congressman involved. I thought at that time there were 50-some thousand, and I do agree with your figure. So just over 100,000, but somebody told me recently that may have been reduced under DOGE. I don't know if they're still up over 100,000, but look at it this way. When I was at the University of Maryland, there again, the professor required those of us who were city slickers to memorize certain statistics. We were told that there were over 660,000 dairy farms. Okay, at the time, they might have averaged about, I don't know, 9 cows. Mm-hmm. They were very small herds. Now, we might have 20,000 left.
Might so have 20,000? Whoa, whoa, whoa. We might have, what was the first number you gave? 600-some thousand?
Yeah, you can even just say just well over 600,000. Most of us, I was told by the professor's study sheet that we had 660-some thousand, okay, back in the early 70s, which would have been when Mr. Nixon was working on his Flanagan report. Okay, so you've got 660,000 dairy farmers, very small herds. I think at the time I've heard might be maybe an average of 9 cows, as, you know, Joe's dad had 20 cows. Mm-hmm. My neighbor's father had 6 cows, so there mm-hmm. were small herds. They were circulating strong money in the community, and they were targeted that we don't need them. We're just going to get some big units. Now we might have 20,000 in 2026. Now let me share this one figure with you. We lost over 1,000 dairy farmers in 2025. Okay, and 41% of those.
Just real quick, just Pennsylvania or across the nation?
No, just over 1,000 in 2025 alone across the nation. Okay. 41% of those lost, 41% of those losses belong to Pennsylvania.
So almost
because
half.
Because Pennsylvania has been a bastion, a remnant of persistent, tough, smaller family dairy farms. Frequently, our state was heralded as a strong family farm dairy community. Okay, but they can't sustain this. This has been going on since April 1st of 81. And what gets me is these farmers who are still milking cows now, say over the past 4 or 5 years, they are tough and they are good managers. Mm-hmm. And they are going down just like all their confreres went down over the past 40 some years. Mm-hmm. They mean business. The government policies will not leave any family dairy farmer standing, which is one thing you see about what's going on in the southern part of the state, with the state basically giving Amos Miller a very hard time. They don't want that local food model mm-hmm. to survive as a model for us to emerge from this industrialization of agriculture to better produce food. Now, I also want to share that we lost, let's see, that would have been the 2025 losses. Between 2017 and 2027, okay, 39% of U.S. dairy farms disappeared. Now, throughout this period of time, as the farmers disappear and their families and their smaller herds, milk production continues to increase.
And that's because they're pumping those cows full of hormones.
That is true. We aren't able to confirm whether it's on a large number of cows or any cows.
Okay.
But the American public, point blank, said they do not want hormone-enhanced milk. Okay, and regardless of the disclaimer they put on the label, I personally buy those commercial dairy products. I have no proof. I have to take their word for it.
Right, right.
But how is it when Joe's dad was farming? He had a much smaller herd average on his milk tank, okay? Mm-hmm. Now you've got cows averaging
90 pounds
and 30,000 pounds a year on annual milk production. Why are we pushing so much milk out of cows if it goes with getting rid of the people who used to milk an average of 9 cows a day and be able to take care of their families? This is that utilitarian, materialistic, mechanistic investor class. This is an investor class model. The investment used to be by families putting down their lives to stay in a local community and pass it on to their grandson or something. That's a huge number of farms to lose since Joe and I met at the University of Maryland.
That's not sustainable. I mean, they're
almost unbelievable.
And I do want to clarify, Diane. I don't know if we summarized my position. Historically, from USDA, for years, we got tremendous professional help from the scientists who are employed at USDA. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what their motives are now, because there are hardly any of us left in business who were benefiting from their help. And now I would say that USDA is not helping farmers like me to stay on the farm. I need to be able to talk to people in on the Ag Committee, in legislative offices. I need to be able to talk to people at Land Grant. I need to be able to talk to people at USDA. And every one of those portals has been shut to me. And I think I speak for a lot of other farmers. And many of our earlier dairy farmer or farming in general advocacy organizations have become, they've either folded, like in the case of ProAg, Mr. Tewksbury passed away, so his organization is no longer functional. You don't have anyone to take over the organizations, the grassroots organizations.
Right.
You do have some remnant groups out there trying. Sometimes they look at this problem from a different political spectrum. But I think we can still reach across and work with some other groups. But even though we might not share all their politics, for whatever your political preferences are. But everybody eats, and everybody is being ripped off and put at risk by the policies that Democrats and Republicans are pushing through ag committees coming out in farm bills and being implemented through USDA and supported by state land-grant universities and their professors and research departments.
Yeah, I was surprised when you said that in that March 6th meeting that 80% of a farm bill is food stamps.
That is correct. And one thing the president's administration has done, I know a lot of people talk about the big, beautiful bill. Mm-hmm. And what I found out, and I didn't even know this happened, not that I'm an expert on everything. I mean, I can't keep up with everything, but I did not know until much later after the deed was done that a significant amount of policy impacting me as a dairy farmer on commodity issues has already been passed because it was hidden in the big, beautiful bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now the skinny farm bill, they call it, I don't know if it's 2.0 or something, mm-hmm. what they've got left in it is very unpleasant to people like me. My understanding is that the Ag Committee, I'm talking about the House Ag Committee at this time, has voted it out to the House floor, and they are going to try to, I hope there's resistance on this, because I don't care if California is a state that maybe people aren't real warm and fuzzy about, but their state strongly passed, I think it's Proposition 12, whereby they have put up certain requirements. If you want to sell pork in California, you've got to guarantee that the animals were raised in the following fashion, a certain amount of room to move around. And I support that because it states' rights. And number two, it will send a ripple effect through the market. You want to sell product in the state of California, can you guarantee that your farmers are raising these hogs in humane mm-hmm. conditions?
Yeah.
What the other side of it is, it created some competition for the smaller hog producers. They looked at it as a niche market. They were all ready to move pork into California because mm-hmm. they were already giving their hogs plenty mm-hmm. of room to move around. Mm-hmm. Okay, now the second thing I'm concerned about is it seems like they want to, I guess I would say, confirm as permanent protections for pesticide companies that they won't have to be held accountable for any health problems that come from the use of their pesticides. In the little bit of reading I've done, definitely Roundup is definitely,
right. mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah.
If anybody, I don't care if you're progressive or conservative, Democrat, Republican, everybody should be concerned about what is coming out of the House Ag Committee in this remnant farm bill.
Surely, though, the House Ag Committee chair, your congressman, is helping you out, right? G.T. Thompson is your congressman. Isn't he helping you out?
Congressman G.T. Thompson, there are many issues that he has helped me out in the past. My family and my husband and I have had issues with certain agencies of the federal government that we needed advocacy from the congressman. And I commend him for that. But I do not have the ability to say equally that he is helping me on my agricultural or dairy farming issues or other dealings I have with the federal government. I've put in calls. I'm very aggressive in my civics duty to communicate to my Congress people mm-hmm. what's going on. And I have not received a warm reception from anyone in his office on dairy issues. There are other issues. They're helping us with an issue. Hopefully right now they'll help us on something that's a fallout from the low milk prices. It's a fallout from the low milk prices concerning our relationship with an SBA loan that we were offered during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we're having financial problems with that because of the milk price.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on my farm that I cannot point to the federal milk mm-hmm. price and the corruption of the co-ops
yeah.
for causing this. And it is a weaponization of their policies to exterminate family dairy farmers.
Yep.
To allow the big corporations to come in. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., yeah. HHS Secretary, was just in Lancaster County. You know, we think Lancaster County, we think Amish, we think Amos Miller, we think farms with Lancaster County, although that's not
yeah.
all PA farmers are not in Lancaster County. So on January 21st, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was in Harrisburg first to kick off his Take Back Your Health tour. And he led two events. One was focusing on the new dietary guidelines for Americans and the Trump administration's efforts to make America healthy again. In Harrisburg, he talked about unveiling a new food pyramid, cutting waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicaid, and securing most favored nation agreements that lower prescription drug costs for Americans. He then went to Lancaster County, where third-generation owner Ron Greider, K-R-E-I-D-E-R, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly, welcomed him to the farms tour. He took Robert F. Kennedy on a tour of the farms, Moo Ternity Barn and Rotary Parlor Milking Facility. And the visit there concluded with a roundtable discussion with local farmers and a conversation with elderly residents about the needs of Pennsylvania's rural communities. And HHS Secretary ended the meeting or the roundtable discussion talking about the HHS implementing the $50 billion Rural Health Transformation Fund and said, quote, rural communities form the backbone of this country, and under President Trump and my watch, Washington will no longer ignore them, unquote. Does he get the picture that dairy farmers are facing right now because of government regulations, government interference?
I'm a strong supporter of RFK Jr. and his efforts, but let's be honest, he is heading up a bureaucracy and he's got to watch his steps. I think he's in a situation where he can ask himself the infamous question, is this the hill I want to die on?
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to give RFK credit for all that he's done. Okay, I think he's done a lot. Mm-hmm. Has he addressed, and it may not even be his authority. This should basically be done by
USDA.
Brooke Rollins in USDA. If she wants to be an advocate for what's going on the dairy farms like mine, then she should come out here and talk to me. And the same also with RFK. Let's get it straight here. When the effort, which was spearheaded by Congressman G.T. Thompson to get the, quote, whole milk back in the schools, let's be honest, 3.25% is, to me, a political definition of whole milk. It is not the level of butterfat that's coming out of the cow.
Right.
We have a lot of cows over 4%. In fact, with the new way they price our milk, if we don't push components through breeding and feeding, we won't have any value to that milk. It's insufficient to cover our costs, but you do want to have as many high percentage components as you can in that milk. So the whole milk, if he drank whole milk at that particular farm on his tour, I can leave it out there. Did he drink it out of their bulk tank? It was probably way up in the 4%. Did he drink raw milk out of their bulk tank? If he did not drink raw milk out of that bulk tank, I don't care what size that dairy farm is, RFK is not being allowed to live the reality of his position, which he is a strong supporter of raw milk. Okay, so the Kreider farm, regardless of they seem to be profitable, that's a rarity. I'm not profitable. I'm destitute. Okay, if they are drinking, the visitors are drinking the raw milk out of his bulk tank, then more power to them. But if they were drinking anything that's in a bottle labeled, I would want to know, is it pasteurized? Is it homogenized? Is it the political definition of whole milk, 3.25% butterfat? Is it? And they don't use this term full fat. Full fat means full fat. It means stop this separating the butterfat off. If your cows in your federal order are averaging over 4% butterfat, a lot of us think that's the level of butterfat the consumer should have an option to purchase. Maybe they don't want 4%. Maybe they want zero. But there should be education of our consumers that there's a range of butterfat. And if the Secretary Kennedy wants to promote whole foods, animal sourced, and he's a proponent of good raw milk, you cannot ignore the fact that most of our commercial dairy products are low fat. Right. To 0%
Right. Yeah. And he's all into real food. He's all into real food for sure. Yeah.
I think they handled him. I think they chose the farm. If they keep your visitors down in southern PA, they're not getting the story.
Right.
You're only going to get the story if you come farther north to the regions that we've all farmed.
Yeah.
And most of the people who would have spoken to him or have passed away. You've got a few left like ourselves. But a lot of the farmers will not speak up. Sometimes they don't understand all the issues. They don't have time.
Right.
They're like the consumers. They also are afraid. Farmers are afraid to speak up for fear of being thrown off the milk trucks. And that has happened. That was one of the issues that happened in the Deep South when Ali Ramadan was down there for the DOJ about what happened to that dairy farm family, because they spoke up and they told the co-op they wanted to see the balance sheet.
So they were doxxed. I mean, that's the modern terminology. If you're, you know, in this case, thrown off the milk truck, but that's just another form of doxing is what it is.
Well, hey, in elimination of a noisy farmer activist who knows his or her citizen rights.
Yeah. So what should the average... Go ahead.
Did I answer your question?
Oh, yeah.
I want to give credit to Kennedy, but that doesn't sound like the kind of farm he should have been
right,
on if he's
right.
interested in pricing.
Right. To me, any farm that has a maternity barn and a rotary
yeah.
parlor milking facility, not a small farm.
No.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And yeah. and maybe 35 years ago, you'd have a couple of maverick, adventuresome farmers. They were out doing that. But
right.
you still have a competitive business model. But the rest of us didn't want to do that. We wanted to touch our cow and
mm-hmm.
give her a hug.
Right. right.
You know, we didn't put in a rotary parlor. But I think you and I and Joe are on the same page on this.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So what can the average citizen do? I mean, to me, as I'm looking at this whole, the whole picture here, over as we've discussed these last two programs, to me, the country's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to the food, I mean, we hear about food deserts, blah, blah, blah. To me, when New York City talks about food deserts, is because there's not enough food on the shelves, or not the right kind of foods, or you're too many blocks away from a grocery store, so you live in a quote-unquote food desert. But in reality, the way I look at it, from what the discussion's been, we are facing as a nation a major problem when it comes to food. And I think RFK does get it, and yes, he definitely works for a bureaucracy, so he has to work through that. But his idea of real food is what the nation needs. And dairy
yes.
farmers with real milk, not the 3.25%, butterfat, in this 1-2%, milk-colored water, basically, is what I think that is.
Yeah.
But as American consumers, we need to be more aware of what's going on with the dairy farmers. We need to do what? I mean, how can we help the dairy farmers? If you had action steps for the average American, what would those be?
Well, I think what you're doing, talking to us, is huge, because at this point, I think the majority of consumers, they may vaguely be aware that there are some problems, but they're like all of us. They're so busy. They have a budget. If they have any money at all, they rush in and they got to grab something. Frequently, it's price.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing to try to expose more people to the fact that there is a crisis in American food systems is huge. At that point, if anyone's blessed to hear what you're going to publish out there, I think they would probably get to the point where they would take seriously what we're saying is that there's a crisis. So what can they do immediately? I tell people to try to do as much as you can locally,
mm-hmm.
read your labels, try to learn as much as you can. It's amazing how many just general Google searches out there, even on mainstream platforms, are talking about what you and I are talking about right now, how most food is so industrialized,
yeah.
it's inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
It's plasticized. We've got all these plastic issues. Almost everything's in plastic. Some of the stores don't let you use plastic at the checkout, yet every bit of your
right.
food
it's in plastic.
Impregnated
yeah.
with plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I think more and more consumers are learning. I know Arden Tewkesbury would tell us for years that he would have fundraisers in grocery stores to help support his organization, but also to interrelate with consumers. He said, except for probably no more than he could count on one hand, the majority of the consumers, when they heard that dairy farmers were not getting a living price out of that milk that they were buying, that they wanted to pay the dairy farmers more. They didn't want it to go to processors,
mm-hmm.
transportation, or retail. They wanted the dairy farmers. So I think our consumers want a just food system starting at the farm, the ranch, and the fisherman's boat.
Right.
I honestly don't think short of an upheaval, something where there's a huge loss of food delivery, that it's going to happen. It should happen from consumers, because we all eat.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to have to be a willingness to try to go to farmers markets, try to get the best food that you can at your grocery store. If you can plant a tomato plant on your patio,
mm-hmm.
one tomato plant
right.
is one thing. And then maybe ask politicians, what are you going to do about this food crisis? You know,
yeah.
but a lot of people are intimidated, Diane. They're not comfortable calling the political offices. So that's what the co-ops and the industrialist food investment class gets away with, kind of an apathy or lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
Consumers and citizens, how to demand accountability in the food system.
Yeah.
And then for me, pray. You've got to
yeah.
pray. You've got to pray that we have God's grace on reforming our food system.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think until they're empty shelves,
mm-hmm.
even then, though, you know, what's on the shelves right now is not healthy for you. I mean, RFK talks about that all the time. And
yeah.
You just read the labels, and if you can't pronounce the ingredients in something, don't buy it. It's my philosophy.
Right.
Idea of a tomato plant, grow a tomato plant or whatever you can on your patio, or if you have enough land, put in a small
yeah.
garden for you and your family, buy a cow.
And I think part of the information has to come from people understanding that that particular part of the farm bill that they have kicked out is going to protect pesticide use.
That's not good.
Now, I'm not a fool. There are times that you have to use the pesticide.
Right.
Okay. But when it's routine part of agronomy, something is wrong, especially when the vast number of people don't want it. And people have to understand, the smaller farmer needs more of the consumer food dollar. That's just the way it is.
Right.
And as far as they're saying that the corporatized, industrialized food model is cheaper, that's a crock. There's a huge burden put on the taxpayers and the ecosystems for damage from these entrenched pesticides. They're putting more Roundup on more crops than I ever knew they were doing.
Yeah.
I thought it was maybe simply some row crops, but now they're doing it on the grain and potatoes and things of that nature.
So that goes into bread and everything else that's made commercially.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not good. And I really, really appreciate you two taking time to be with us these past two programs. It's really frightening when you think about all the junk, the pesticides and the plastics and whatever else is actually being put into our foods.
Yeah.
And they're calling it food. And in reality, it is harming the body.
What starts here in America on food policy spreads across the world.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We have got to stop the spread of industrial food from this country to other nations through these trade agreements.
Do you think a lot of it's coming from China, the food?
I think a significant I can't say there. We know about the pharmaceuticals coming from China.
Right.
So something is no doubt coming from China. But also other nations are not necessarily, they may be kind of friendly to us politically, but we have no knowledge of what they're doing to their products. I know that a lot of us support MCOOL. We want mandatory country of origin labeling, and we want the labels to mean something to the consumer so they can easily look at what's in the case.
Right.
And I want it to include dairy because we have no proof they aren't back trading dairy products into this country.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good. Anyway, thanks so much, Joe and Brenda. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You guys take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, take care.
Thank you for joining us on American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. Please note that the views and opinions expressed by our guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the AFA of Pennsylvania. We value your opinions as well. To continue the conversation, visit afaofpa.org, where you'll find links to all our social media. If you're passionate about defending traditional values in our state, we invite you to get involved with the American Family Association of Pennsylvania. Visit our website at afaofpa.org or write P.O. Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania 16323 to learn more and to take action. Together, we can make a difference for the families and the future of Pennsylvania.